Some days it's interest rates, some days it's a share market, some days it's the price at the servo. But the business story is never just business. I'm Carrington Clark, host of ABC Business Daily. From Monday to Thursday, I'm joined by the ABC's business reporters to break down the biggest stories in business, finance, and the economy. And on Fridays, Alan Kohler jumps in the chair for That's Business, sitting down with industry leaders, movers and shakers, CEOs and founders to talk to the people leading and building the economy. All in the same ABC Business Daily feed. Find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, the government's legislation to restrict gambling ads is expected to hit Parliament tomorrow, but it could still face a lengthy debate. The Greens and the Coalition are still yet to decide their positions. So what are they thinking? You're going to hear from both of them shortly. Then, big changes in the Australian media landscape.
So I'm free. Truly independent.
Not just with Karl Stefanovic, but also with one of the country's leading youth media outfits, Junkee. You're going to hear from its co-founder.
It was something that some friends and I originally co-founded when I was in my mid-20s. I'm now in my mid-40s and I have changed, and the world of digital media is constantly evolving. All of those media companies that really rode the wave of social media, they're trying to find how they interact and what they look like in this new changing landscape that we're in.
The latest on all things media with Tim Duggan, ahead of his National Press Club address today. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. So you can probably think of today's program as a bit of a primer for what is going to be a significant political debate. It's already been going for a pretty long time, but from tomorrow, this conversation is going to take a bit of a turn because the government is introducing to the Parliament its legislation to restrict gambling advertising. Now, before we hear from the pollies, let me bring in our political correspondent, Tom Crowley, for a quick explanation of what we're expecting.
Well, this is the long-awaited response to the Murphy Review, Peter Murphy's review, several years ago now. The government has been under major pressure to respond to this since then, including from within its own ranks, but the Prime Minister has never really favoured the wholesale ad ban that called for. And so instead we have some time restrictions, we have some opt-out type features online, among other things in this bill. Crossbenchers, including the Greens, say the government squibbed it, that they've caved to the gambling companies, and you've got crossbenchers like Monique Ryan saying they just not going to vote for it. But in the Senate, David Pocock and the Greens seem to be positioning themselves to use their leverage to try and extract some more from the government, get them to go further. But the crucial question, I think, is the Coalition. You've got some within their ranks, including Simon Kennedy, but in fact 17 of them who signed a letter that was published in The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, an ad alongside John Howard, saying they wanted the government to go further. Andrew Hastie was one of them. It's not the official Coalition position. Sarah Henderson is sort of reserving her position. She's the shadow, and she says there's just concerns about how the government's plans would work, but she's not directly calling for it to go further. So there's a lively debate within the opposition party room about, well, Peter Dutton went out on a limb on this subject in his first budget reply. He really took the lead on this. Could the Coalition do the same today? Maybe even the Coalition and the Greens could have mutual interest in teaming up together to force the government essentially to go further than this in the Senate. For now, at least, that mutual interest is in a lengthy Senate inquiry, and it seems that the two of them will at least ensure that that happens. There's a long way to go on this.
Tom Crowley there. So, as he mentioned, the Greens and some crossbench MPs say the restrictions on advertising don't go nearly far enough. So let's hear from them. Sarah Hanson-Young is a South Australian senator and the Greens' spokesperson for arts and communications. And here is what Melissa Clark asked her first.
It's been reported that the Coalition wants a parliamentary inquiry into the government's proposed laws on gambling advertising. Is that something the Greens have spoken to the Coalition about teaming up on?
Yes, we have, because we know that this piece of legislation, as flagged by the government, goes nowhere near what their own report, the Murphy report, recommended needed doing to stop the harm of gambling and specifically the harm of gambling advertising and inducements. So I have been talking to my colleagues across all sides and including the coalition. We will work to send the bill to an inquiry at the end of this week, and we will kick the tyres on what the government is putting forward. But let me say, I mean, it fails on four key points. Mm-hmm. It fails on delivering a full ban on the advertising, which is what Peter Murphy, the late Labor MP, recommended. It fails on delivering a national regulator. So you want to do something about gambling, you want to put in place laws to regulate and to stop the harms of advertising, you need someone to keep an eye on it. We need a national regulator. It fails to stop the real surge of gambling advertising that is being pushed online into the hands of young people, onto our screens, whether our phones or our tablets or our smart televisions. And it fundamentally fails to do anything about inducements. That's the really targeted advertising. It's an insidious part of the system, and Labor is failing to tackle all four of those areas.
We were just speaking before the news to Dan Tehan from the Coalition, and he was suggesting that their concerns were predominantly around exposure that kids face to gambling advertising, and suggesting that some of the restrictions around television advertising perhaps could be stronger in an effort to protect children. Do you think you're going to be able to find points of commonality with the Coalition? Because a lot of the issues that you're raising here don't seem to be what the Coalition is focused on.
They're at least saying that this doesn't go far enough, and that's better than what Labor's putting on the table. But this is a chance for the Coalition to actually stand for something. I mean, Angus Taylor talks a big game. Here's his chance. Stand up to Labor, work with the Greens to fix this. I agree. The way young people are targeted through this advertising is insidious, and we need to stop that. But you know what else hurts young people and children? Is when their mum or dad is addicted to gambling. Families are being torn apart because of gambling addiction, and advertising of this harmful product just needs to stop.
When it comes to having an inquiry through the legislative process for this bill, that would cause a delay. Now, Annika Wells, the Communications Minister, hasn't addressed a parliamentary inquiry specifically, but she did have this to say about the passage of gambling advertising laws.
Every day that gambling harm reduction advocates and their supporters in the parliament argue for an extended Senate inquiry, further public inquiry, the other side of the fence uses that as a reason to delay implementation. And to me, delaying actual reform and actual implementation isn't worth further consultation on a piece that has been very publicly and prolifically discussed for 3 years.
What's your response to that? There has been significant work done already. You point to the Murphy report. You know what changes you want. Does an inquiry really help the process, or do you just need to put up the amendments and get on with voting on it?
Look, I think that's unfortunately a really pathetic response from the minister. Like, the experts have told us what we need to do. It's all outlined in the Murphy report, and the government's failing. They're failing to deliver on what they promised to do. The purpose of an inquiry is to put pressure and expose those holes and work out which ones we can plug. I want to plug all of them, but let's work out which ones we can plug. Now, the reason the government doesn't want an inquiry is because they don't want this exposed. They want this problem to go away. They've put up a half-assed bill that doesn't deal with the problems.
If you cannot succeed in getting any amendments up with the Coalition, would the Greens be willing to pass the legislation through as it is?
I'm not even going to contemplate this legislation as it is passing, because no one should be passing it. The government shouldn't be passing it. The Coalition...
I would expect you to say that as a negotiating tactic, the Coalition shouldn't be passing it. But you might be in the position where you can't come to an agreement with the Coalition on amendments and you have to make a decision. Is this better than nothing?
Look, this is my point here. You know, Angus Taylor talks a big game. I mean, I've seen the reports out of the government, the Coalition's talking points this morning. It's all about Labor. All right, come on, big man. Show us how strong you are. Let's actually work to fix this. Stand up to Labor, work with us, and protect families.
Sarah Hanson-Young, a South Australian senator, also the Greens' spokesperson for arts and communication. We heard in that interview, Mel mention our earlier interview with the Coalition's senior shadow minister, Dan Tehan. There are a couple of things to talk to him about today, including his views on this gambling legislation.
In your view and in the view of the Coalition, does the government's proposed gambling reforms go far enough?
Well, we want to work with the government to make sure that we get this right. There is a feeling that there are some changes that need to be made to tighten it, especially when it comes around children being able to view television ad-free when it comes to gambling advertising. So we're going to work through that as a party, as a Liberal Party, the National Party, and then continue discussions with the government. And Sarah Henderson is right across this issue, and we'll be working to make sure that we absolutely get the balance right.
And is that something that you are hopeful of persuading the government to accept some amendments, or do you think you can work with the Greens here to try and get the government to toughen this bill up?
Look, I don't want to speak for Sarah, but my understanding is that Sarah is working with the government to try and see whether we can get the type of balance that we need to get on this right. And, you know, she will no doubt pursue this, as she always does, with absolute vigour. And I've got good confidence that, you know, she's listening to what the members of the party room have to say, and then we'll work with the government to make sure we get the best outcome that we think we can.
I mean, the Coalition has pushed very hard on this issue. It was Peter Dutton, when he was leader of the Liberal Party, who really put a big policy on the agenda in his budget reply speech at the time that he gave, pushing this issue forward politically. Do you need to follow that up and make sure that you do force the government to put in place a stronger gambling restriction regime, or do you face the risk of a bit of political backlash if you don't follow through on that intention?
Oh, no, I think, you know, it's the first point I would make is the reason we're here is because of the Coalition leadership during last term. We put this firmly on the agenda and we want to follow through on that. But it's, you know, 3 or 4 years since then, and we've one of the things we've got to understand is the impact that this would have on the broadcasters themselves. Over that period of time, we've seen value eroded from those organisations. So it's like everything. Good government is about getting the balance right, and we want to take a very mature approach on this and work to get the balance right. We don't want kids exposed to advertising when they're going to sit down and watch Friday night footy match, and that's what we're working to make sure that we can achieve.
Dantin, who do you see as the Liberal Party's great challenge? Is it the Labor Party or is it One Nation?
No, it's the Labor Party. It's this woeful, woeful government that the Australian people are looking at and say, we don't trust. We've got a Prime Minister who lies before the election and does things afterwards. You've got taxation policies, $77 billion worth that have just been introduced through the budget. You've got spending, which is out of control, and you've got living standards in this country falling at a rate that we're not seeing anywhere else in the developed world. So that's where our focus is.
Are you referring to real wages there, the decline in real
well,
wages?
Is that the standard decline of living metric you're the using? The decline in not only real wages, but in people's actual living standards. So they are collapsing at a greater rate than they are anywhere else in the Western world. And this is, you know, people are feeling this. And I can tell you, out in the electorate, the mood of the people is very, very grumpy. And
well, in electorates like yours, One Nation is the big challenge, isn't it? I mean, if you're how do you balance focusing on Labor when in seats like yours in regional parts of the country, people are looking to One Nation?
Well, the last election, my biggest threat was the Teals, and you know, and I was very clear, and you know, tried to let my electorate know this, that this was Labor, the Teals, and the Greens all working together. They were, you know, exchanging T-shirts and doing all sorts of things. So but ultimately, the top dog and the person controlling all this is the Labor Party, and that's who we've got to target. And can I say this? Mm. You know, we have a Prime Minister who is as political animal the like I haven't seen outside of Dan Andrews. Everything he does is about politics and about making sure that the Labor Party continues in power. Now,
can I ask about your leader? Because Angus Taylor has obviously taken the helm of the Liberal Party. He's announced a big taxation policy, wanting to index tax brackets as a cost of living measure. But he too is a political creature. He's out there talking just as much at the moment about Brumbies and feral horse management as he is tax policies at the moment. Is that the way you think the Liberal Party's going to return to power with that focus?
Pursuing through the parliament the taxation agenda, the $77 billion worth of new taxes that the Labor Party are trying to impose day in, day out. And doing that, he gave a very, very comprehensive budget in reply speech, which set out a policy agenda.
And that was the Coalition frontbencher, Dan Tehan. He was talking to Mel Clark on Radio National Breakfast this morning. So there is a lot of news around at the moment about the news, the media companies creating a lot of the content that we're consuming. There's Karl Stefanovic and his departure from the Today Show. There's also the growing power of big tech, how companies are training artificial intelligence models on local Australian journalism. There's also the adoption of AI by various media companies. Then there's what's happening with youth digital media. Two significant players, Vice and Junkee, this week announced a pretty big shift in their operations. So to cover all of that, we invited on Tim Duggan. Years ago, he co-founded Junkee Media. He is now the chair of the Digital Publishers Alliance, and today he's actually addressing the National Press Club about the future of Australian media. So before he hit the podium, he joined Mel, and she asked him about this news from Junkee, and it's shifting to what it's calling a leaner, creator-led model.
I mean, Junkee will always have a special place in my heart. Mm. It was something that some friends and I originally co-founded when I was in my mid-20s. I'm now in my mid-40s and I have changed, and the world of digital media is constantly evolving. I think what Junkee and Pedestrian and Vice and all of those media companies that really rode the wave of social media up and down, they're trying to find how they interact and what they look like in this new changing landscape that we're in.
So do you see it less as a warning bell and more as a sign of the times are continuing to evolve?
Yeah, I do. I think that our media industry at the moment has so many new interesting growth areas, and it has areas of contraction. Mm. And that is one of the most wonderful things about the media industry is that it's constantly changing. It is also one of the most frustrating things.
And scary things as well, yeah.
It really is. And so I think you can't look at any individual media title too much. You need to look at kind of larger trends of what's happening.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of those larger trends. You've been looking at some of the threats that face digital media. It took me through what both big legacy mainstream media organisations are dealing with in this changing tech environment. How does that compare to some of the smaller digital players?
Yeah, so I now represent a group called the Digital Publishers Alliance. We are an independent body. We have about 150 media titles that we represent. So all of the middle range of media. Mm. And interestingly, the things that are affecting us are very similar to the things affecting mainstream media. And I've narrowed it down to three large threats that I'm going to talk about today at the Press Club address from 12:30. And they are big tech and their very big ambitions. It is government paralysis, in that the speed that government moves at and the speed at which technology moves at are very different.
Very different speed rates, yes.
And the third one is trust. Mm. And Australians' trust of news and the rise of AI and the rise of mis and disinformation on the internet.
Can you deal with any one of those issues in isolation? Like, how interlinked are those
Extremely
factors?
Interlinked. Yeah. I think government inaction is, because big tech has so many ambitions, the reason why we have less people trusting news is because of social media, it is because of generative AI, it is because of deep fake videos. And so they're all extremely interlinked. And it's a very complex time to be a media company at the moment. It's also a very complex time to be a media consumer.
Yeah, and it's a complex time for governments trying to deal with this. We have seen in Australia initiatives by the federal government, the News Bargaining Initiative in particular, as a way to try and make sure that there is funding coming to Australian media organisations that are affected by the way the big tech companies and their platforms work. We see in the Canadian experience when they've tried to move in this area, we've had Meta sort of effectively block a lot of news companies and their contents from their platforms. You know, what do you think the lessons are that the Australian government should be taking from some of the international experiences we've seen?
It's quite fascinating that everyone around the world is trying to tackle this. This is not an Australian-only problem. And Canada is a really great example because they're roughly similar in many ways to Australia. Certainly the media landscape is quite similar. And so a few years ago when Meta who are a pretty terrible corporate citizen, decided that they didn't agree with government policies, both here in Australia and in Canada. In Australia, they threatened to ban news, which would mean that any Australian going onto Instagram or going onto Facebook would not be able to see any news from any Australian news provider. They threatened it in Australia 3 years ago. They didn't go ahead with it. They did threaten it again last month. In Canada, they went ahead with it. So 3 years ago, they completely banned news. And the impact of that was there was about 11 million pages of news content every single day that just got completely banned. Mm. So people were not able to access that. The result is that a lot of local Canadian outlets, a lot of smaller outlets, some reports have about 30% of them have been majorly affected. Mm. Some of them closing down, a lot of them losing staff members because all of a sudden they don't have access to an audience. The other impact of that is a wider impact on democracy. There's a very clear link between news literacy and people understanding news and listening to news and things like polarisation and things like mis and disinformation.
Is there a lesson there for the Australian government that these tech companies will play hardball? Do you have to factor that in when they go in to try and figure out how to make policies and how to go about implementing them?
Very much so. And the question is who folds first? Who is more powerful? Mm. The Australian government or a large US tech company? And that is a question that is still to be answered. Sadly, you'd like to think the Australian government has power and jurisdiction over our own environment, but there's a lot of reasons to think that the US tech companies, in particular even AI companies now, are so large and so powerful that it is a real question.
Tim Duggan there, the co-founder of Junkee Media. He's now the chair of the Digital Publishers Alliance, and today he will be addressing the National Press Club about the future of Australian media. You'll be able to catch up on that on ABC iView. Well, today is the first day of a new financial year. Business and political nerds are rejoicing. We're actually teasing Carrington Clark a little earlier on the show that this was essentially like the first day of January. Not sure how he brings in this new year. You'll have to find out on the ABC's Business Daily podcast. But he joined us on Radio National Breakfast this morning to break down some of the changes that we're going to see today.
Well, I've tried to like put it on a bit of a timeline for when people might notice that the new financial year is amongst us. The first thing people might have noticed is fuel costs should have risen and are going to continue to rise, you would think, over the day or the coming couple of days. So that is because we have seen that excise cut halved. It was 32 cents. It's now 16 cents. That, all other things else being equal, should mean that petrol costs go up by 16 cents per litre. I've had a look at some of the data. It's still coming through in batches. It looks like it's risen a bit, but it doesn't appear at this point to have gone up the full 16 cents, but there might be a bit of a lag to see that coming through. Remembering, though, it's still lower, petrol prices, this is in aggregate or the average, it's still lower than it was before the initiation of the Israeli American war against Iran. So people are still in a pretty good position. It's nowhere near those spikes that we saw in the early days of the war, but people obviously would rather pay less for fuel than more. Then people might notice a bump in their pay packet, and that's because we have seen this kind of small tax cut where the bottom tax rate has dropped one percentage point to 15%. That means if you're earning over $45,000 a year, you'll save $268 per year. There's also a change to how quickly people will receive their superannuation guarantee payments, how quickly that will hit your superannuation account. And that's because the government has changed the rules. Employers no longer get to pay that up to quarterly. Instead, they have to pay it within 7 days of people paying their normal wage. That should mean it's easier for people to keep track of their superannuation payments to make sure they are getting the correct amount. And it also means it's in the account for longer, and that means it's earning a return quicker, and hopefully that means people have more money for retirement. You'll then see changes to things like your NBN, your internet bill, because you've got a lot of regulatory changes that have happened kicking in on the 1st of July. There'll be changes to tolls in different places, but a whole raft of different changes to your finances. So pay attention and see if you can improve your financial situation by shopping around.
And that is Radio National Breakfast's business and economics correspondent, Carrington Clark there. And as I mentioned, you can catch more of him every day on the ABC's Business Daily podcast. You can find that in the same place you find us, on ABC Listen. You get to hear all those interviews from Mel Clark, produced by the Radio National Breakfast team. And today's Breakfast Wrap was produced by Eddie Diamond and Katie McAllister. I'm Luke Sidham-Dunton. We'll see you tomorrow.